Imagine a group of local neighborhood residents just executing a hostile corporate takeover of a massive hospital.
Right. Like they just walk in and take charge.
Yeah, they audit the finances, they inspect the facilities, and they even get a say in hiring the boss.
It sounds like this radical utopian social experiment.
It really does. But in 2001, the Western Cape government actually made this entirely legal through the Health Facility Boards Act.
Yeah, they really did.
So welcome to today's deep dive. Our mission for this one is to unpack how this specific legislation serves as a blueprint, really, for giving everyday people control over complex public institutions.
It's wild because it just completely turns the traditional model of public healthcare administration upside down.
How so?
Well, I mean, usually you have this top-down bureaucracy making all the rules for the patients, right?
Right, the classic bureaucratic nightmare.
Exactly. But this act forces that same bureaucracy to share the boardroom table with the very people who are actually using the hospital.
And by sharing the table, you mean, well, the law mandates that at least 50% of these boards have to be community representatives.
Yeah, 50%. And the boards are only like 8 to 14 members in total.
So half the votes just instantly go to the neighborhood.
Completely.
Okay, let's unpack this because my immediate cynical reaction is that local politicians would just exploit this instantly.
Oh, absolutely. That's the first thing you'd think of.
Right. Like they could just easily stack those community seats with their cronies to control the hospital budgets.
But what's fascinating here is that the legislation actually anticipates that exact vulnerability. It explicitly bans political parties from nominating anyone to these boards.
Wait, seriously? A complete ban.
A complete ban. The nominations have to originate from the ground up. So, we're talking civic organizations, women's groups, youth structures.
Patient advocates, that kind of
It's
thing.
exactly welfare organizations, patient advocates. So a political party can't just, slide a candidate in through the back door.
Because they need the documented backing of those specific groups.
Right. It blocks all that political maneuvering by keeping the selection process tied directly to groups that have a real vested, nonpartisan interest in the hospital actually functioning.
Okay, but even if you keep the politicians out and you get genuine patient advocates in those seats, that creates a totally different problem.
How do you mean?
Well, how does a group of regular citizens actually enforce their will against established, hospital doctors and seasoned administrators?
Right. Like, do they actually have real power?
Yeah. Do they have real authority, or is this just a formalized suggestion box?
Oh, they have legally codified teeth.
Really?
Yeah, the act gives them the power to participate in hiring the head of the hospital.
Oh, wow.
They're also authorized to conduct physical inspection visits to monitor the facility. I mean, as long as they don't interfere with actual medical procedures, obviously.
Obviously.
And they can even establish and manage their own independent trust funds.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. It sounds a lot like a school PTA.
But on steroids.
Yes, like instead of just holding a bake sale to buy some new dodgeballs, this PTA has the legal authority to audit the school's finances and interview the new principal.
That's a great way to put it. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, their authority isn't static. The act has this incremental expansion clause.
Incremental expansion.
Yeah.
How does that actually work in practice? Like, how does a neighborhood board prove to a massive medical bureaucracy that they deserve more power?
It's all based on measurable administrative competence.
Okay.
So the provincial head of department reviews the board's track record. They look at things like whether those independent trust funds are cleanly audited.
Right, making sure the money is right.
Exactly. Or if their inspection reports are actually leading to tangible improvements and if their meetings are managed well.
And if they do all that,
If they demonstrate that capability, the head of department can legally authorize them to exercise additional powers. But, if they mismanage the funds or fail in their duties, those powers get revoked.
so it creates this dynamic system of earned trust. The better the community manages the hospital, the more control the government hands over.
Precisely.
So, what does this all mean for you listening to this right now? Why should you care about a piece of provincial legislation from over 2 decades ago?
It's a fair question.
Because it provides concrete proof that everyday citizens don't just have to be passive consumers of public services.
Yeah.
Given the right legal framework, you can actively govern them.
It really fundamentally redefines the entire relationship between a government and its people,
It does.
which kind of leaves us with a compelling thought for you to consider today. If ordinary citizens can be legally trusted to manage the complex finances and the leadership of a massive medical facility.
The actual life and death stuff.
Right. What other massive, intimidating public institutions in your life could be completely revolutionized by giving the community a mandatory 50% controlling stake?
Oh, that's a wild thought.
Just imagine your local neighborhood actually running the water grid or the city transit system.